Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Oops! All Anime... Anime. Yep, that's the word. Anime Gaiden. This is the side story that fills out your knowledge of the world of anime. You may have heard of Dragon Ball Z and Sailor Moon, but we're not doing the big hits. We're doing the cult classics, like Olivia Zircon, cult classic.
We've got some cults planned, we've got some classics planned, we've got some events planned. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be a good weekend.
There we go. Everyone is looking forward to the weekend.
Everybody is looking forward to the weekend, partying all weekend long.
Alright.
I saw the start of the first episode of season 2, and I was gonna lead into the food fight from the partying. damn. I guess we can't talk about the food fight that's choreographed like an action scene.
This is a general spoiler cast. I think it's up to us what we're spoiling. So let's establish some limits. We're talking about Ruby again.
Oh, Christ. What do we want to cover? You're gonna make me cry because I'm gonna talk about Volume 3 and the ending. Okay, the ending of Volume 3 made me realize that actually Ruby had been, like, winning me over way more than I thought even the first time. And, yep. Yeah, just, there isn't even a tragedy at the end of... Here's the thing about Ruby. Ruby is fun, and it's about kids in the school, and they hunt monsters, and they throw bees at each other. And then it's not fun anymore because the world can be awful. And I didn't realize that that was part of what Ruby's promise was at the beginning, and so that at the end of Volume 3 was a huge point for me as far as how I saw the show. And then I ended up not continuing to watch the show, and as time went on, I didn't want to go back, because while the ending of Volume 3 was tragic, it was a moment at the very end. And so I don't think we're going to spoil the details of stuff later in Ruby, but I want to hear a bit about Volume 4 and 5 without hearing about, like, which characters do what and what factions do what. I mean, I made my case for Volume 3 where it shows that there can be actual tragedy in the show that presented itself as, like, pure and, like... It felt like there was no room for tragedy in Volume 1 and 2. And, well, I don't know about Volume 2, but in Volume 1, it felt like there was no room for real tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think... I feel like the tone of the various seasons is, like, Season 1 is, like, establishing and figuring out how to make a show, mostly. Season 2 is kind of getting into the groove of things and fleshing out the cast a little bit more so that you have a better picture of who these people are. Season 3, as you say, is building to, like, okay, this is what the show is actually going to kind of be about, because for the first two seasons, it's all a school setting, and then Season 3, they start to transition away from that. As you say, it ends in a tragedy. And Season 4 is kind of just everyone coping with the tragedy. It feels very much like what it is, which is the season they produced after Monty Ohm died.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
It's a lot of people coping with the aftermath and being like, what the fuck do we do now? And then Season 5 is kind of them getting back on the horse and, like, being like, well, we didn't finish school, but we're not really in a position to, and we've just got to go out there and tackle the problems that are in this world.
Okay, then I'm gonna watch the rest of Ruby, because I didn't know yet if I was going to go back. I knew that Season 3 I thought was really good back then, but I just didn't know what was after it, and I didn't know if I wanted to rewatch Ruby just to watch to the same point again and then leave it off, because I don't know what happens next and it's been too long.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I have, like, some sense of what sort of story they tell for each of those volumes, I want to go yeah, well, I'll go back through starting from the beginning of Volume 2, picking up where I left off a couple weeks ago, and watch the rest. So, I'm sold on the show now, but I think that there's more to talk about than we did at the beginning.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And because I haven't rewatched Season 2 recently. I've got notes for everything from Red Trailer all the way through number, what was it, 16, right?
The end of the first season?
Yeah.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, so I started with the Red Trailer, and as soon as I started it, I remembered everything about watching it in a... I mean, I'm going to have to look up the date that it came out, because this might be a false memory, but I remember watching it either in a Coffee Bean or in a FedEx Kinko's in one of the beach cities of California where I was living at the time, having fun with the free internet, and somebody was like, new Rooster Teeth, and I was like, okay, cool, I love Minecraft videos. And there was what I would later come to think of as Devil May Cry-style action going on in, like, something from a comedy company. And it was radical, and firing up the Red Trailer again this time, like, immediately brought me back to how cool that was to see with no expectations, even though, like, I have Art of Ruby up on my wall, like, you know, I know what it is, but just the tone and the framing and the music and everything at the setup of the beginning of that video gets you hyped up for it as if you haven't seen it before, and that's awesome, I think. And I think that the rest of the trailers don't ever quite live up to that, and I'm curious what you think.
I agree and disagree, I guess. And I think the strongest thing about the R trailer, the Red trailer, is that there's no dialogue. 'Cause it took them, I'm gonna say it took them more than a season to figure out how to write good dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these first four trailers, the dialogue is kind of bad.
I really enjoy the trailer, the dialogue at the end of the yellow trailer. Like, very specifically, I enjoy it. When Ruby and Yang get up, it's like, but yeah, it's bad. That's true. Fuck. It is. I just really enjoy it.
I think, like, and also the other thing that's interesting is noting, so since the Red trailer is the first bit of content from Ruby that we see, it's our introduction to the concept of the Grimm, and it's interesting to see that they're just, like, silhouettes of werewolves in this. It's just, like, the art design is not there yet for what the Grimm are. Which are, if you're not familiar, they're the monsters from the show. But also, if you're not familiar, I'm not gonna say, why are you listening to this? Plenty of people listen to spoiler casts without having, but, like, you know, you're probably gonna miss
some things. Okay, yeah, so you and Jenny did that really good one on, My Hero Academia, and I listened to all that, and that was really good. And I
thank you.
I'm not gonna probably watch that, and I've been thinking about watching it and have not for a while, and I was just like, you know what, I'm just gonna listen to my friends talk about it, and yeah, it sounds like a good show. I'm glad that it was good, and have fun listening to the spoiler cast, everybody who's not watching Ruby, even though it's worth watching.
Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's I feel like the thing about the Red trailer is, other than some of, like, the early clumsiness of the animation and art design, it doesn't really have any, like, overt flaws, which I think the other three trailers all have.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, I think the other three trailers, except for White, I don't think the White trailer is good. I think the White trailer is the weakest
trailer. God, the White trailer sold me on Weiss.
Well, you...
Oh, God, we didn't have the Weiss conversation last... Oh... Wait, did you say I'm an easy sell?
What?
Excuse me, I'm going to edit this. Just tell me, did you say that I'm an easy sell on Weiss?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, I'm peeking a lot in the audio there because I was called the fuck out.
I mean, like, if you were sold by, like, hey, she fought a knight once and she can't sing very good, then I don't know.
The, like, everything about the aesthetic of that with, like, all the whites and silvers and grays, and then, like, the red on the dress and the blood when she gets cut and she looks all defined and shit, is the best.
It's fine. I personally was not as big a fan of that one. I think at first you think the black trailer is going to be the best one.
Oh, absolutely.
And then it kind of, and then it kind of loses the, it, it kind of, there are two problems with it. One, the music goes from great to bad. You know, like all of a sudden it's like, oh wait, no, now this is bad. It started out really, oh, this is bad now. Which is a thing that happens with Ruby music with every now and then. It's just like, oh, this is, oh, it turns. Oh, here's the rap breakdown. Oh, this is terrible. And then also, yeah, just like the writing and stuff, like the end of the black trailer has a dramatic, I mean, you know, listen, it's the fucking third trailer. I can spoil it. It's Blake turning her back on the White Fang, but like, it's not foreshadowed or contextualized at all in this trailer. It's like she's fighting alongside a friend for this whole trailer, and the last minute she's like, okay, bye. It's like, wait, what? What? Why did you do that? It's very, very sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the yellow trailer is that, well, they sexualize Yang and have her, like, you know, offer to, like, make out with a dude and then doesn't really do it, but it's like, she's about to enter high school. This is really inappropriate, and I don't like this.
Yeah.
It's bad.
I always read that as being so pantomimey and ridiculous because of the performance that I assumed that it was, like, her being goofy and distracting him by, like, he's like, what the fuck is this teenager doing? Not like, oh, and now I realize that that is probably not the case, and I was giving them the benefit of the doubt.
I mean, like, there's the pantomime. Like, I would buy that if it weren't for the fact that leading up to this, like, the first shots we get of Yang are, like, a close shot up of her thighs, and then it pans to her, like, boob window. Like,
oh,
no.
Yeah.
No.
That's true.
They've ruined it. Like, by the point they get to the fake kiss goof, they have absolutely ruined my goodwill.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully the fight is good, but it's not great, and it doesn't make up for the gross. Don't.
Mm-hmm.
Good grief.
The one thing that is striking about these trailers, though, is that they have a stronger, and, you know, whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, I'm not sure. But, like, the use of color is really striking in these trailers, and it isn't duplicated in the same way in the show.
Yeah, well, do you remember which volume the color thing is revealed with the color names? Is that something that was revealed in this one and I just, like, skimmed past it because I already knew it, or is that in a later one?
I remember it being revealed in interviews. I don't remember it ever coming up in the actual show.
I believe that it's a story time thing about the war and they lost their colors.
Oh, I skipped some of the story time things because they're bad.
there was one with some Princesses of Seasons that was very basic fairy tale-y, but, like, in a way that it was enjoyable. Like, oh, you understood how fairy tales actually work this time. The rest of their animatics in the later seasons are not good. It's just lore, but it's like, I need like a more complex world and mythology. Then it's the dust, it's colorful, and it does everything. If you're going to want me to care about your deep lore about the dust.
Right. Yeah. Gosh, I just wanted to, like, I want to spoil big shit. Like, there are moments that I want to talk about.
Get to that. First, I want to run through, as fast as I can, all of Volume 1. Not episode by episode, because that's not how Volume 1 actually functions narratively.
Mm-hmm.
How Volume 1 functions is the four trailers, which more or less make up, like, by having the separate things all in parallel, one episode more or less worth of meaning, and, you know, you find out that Ruby and Yang are sisters, I think, in the last one, so that's a little bit of a character relationship, and it all adds up to maybe an episode worth of, like, narrative. After that, until episode 15... every two episodes are part one and part two of an episode. And the first episode is also standalone. Yeah, the first episode and the second episode are separate, I think. Because I'm looking at the first episode summary that I have here. And that fight is clearly distinct from what happens in episode two. Mm-hmm. My first note for episode two is, it's also a gun. We already talked about episode one and how it's the fight, the Cowboy Bebop movie. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. It's one thing, I don't know. I was talking with a friend, who, like, so, again, one of the reasons we ended up doing this is because Ruby is in Cross Tag Battle, and we ended up, like, that ends up putting Ruby in more of a in the public conversation than, it might have been before, right? And I had some friends being like, you know, like, Ruby seems okay, but, like, there aren't any other characters anyone would want from the show in this game. It's like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah, you're wrong.
And I was like, let me explain something to you. There is a girl who uses a sword and shield that can become a javelin, that can become a lever-action rifle that has magnet powers. You're extremely wrong. Pyrrha is the best, and it's... We didn't talk about her at all in our first
No, we didn't, and episode. I felt like I was doing that on purpose because, like...
Right.
Pyrrha is, like, the surprise of the latter half of the season.
Yes.
Like, Pyrrha sadly isn't the star of the latter half of Volume 1, but Pyrrha is what makes it. Like, what tells you that they can pull this off is they pulled it off with one character, and it's Pyrrha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. Pyrrha is basically their first demonstration that they actually kind of can, that they can run a show, I think. It's like, oh no, they can create this character who serves a narrative purpose and is compelling and feels well executed.
And now I'm looking at episode 15 and 16 and I'm not actually seeing Pyrrha in the, like, two separate episodes that made the ending. Instead, nope. It's Penny. And Penny's fun. I'm combat ready. Not like Penny's combat ready. I'm combat ready. But also Penny's combat ready and she's great. And it almost feels like a disservice because I know more about Penny. And it's almost like you needed to introduce her like in our episode or two earlier so you could have had more of her. So, like, I don't know. She's such an endearing character to me off of her characterization in Volume 2 and 3. And when I know that that's there in the future, I wish that it would have come across better when they first debut her. Because I think that, like, she deserved the writing where, like, from the start she's really endearing and it didn't quite land.
Well, I think part of the thing with Penny is that they needed a way to end the season, right?
Yeah.
Like, this season doesn't really feel like it has, like, it has an episode and you're like, oh, okay, this is the end of the season. But, like, it doesn't feel like a crescendo that they really did a good job of building to. It's just kind of hastily like, oh, wait, I guess the season has to end. We're going to sort of resolve the villain of the season who hasn't actually been around that much. And we're going to hint at a larger world and we're going to introduce this mysterious new character, Penny. Mm-hmm. And it feels just kind of like, and it's not a particularly well executed finale for season one. It feels very, very workmanlike. Like they ended it because they had to end it, but they wanted to tell more stuff before they called it.
Yeah, I see that. There was something that I noticed when I was watching them back to back. Just, I don't know, being more cognizant of, like, the fact that media is made and, like, when you see shortcuts and stuff, then that's people saving probably, like, an hour or two of work, and that's a lot of shortcuts and that adds up. And that also means that sometimes you can tell that the reason that there are, between episode 2 and episode 15, a bunch of two-parters is because they needed to split up the budget for the season to cover X amount of action scenes, but Y amount of weeks of show to keep the mm-hmm. show running, to keep subscriptions for this show specifically.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I think that's a large part, like, very much season one is not just them figuring out how to animate and how to write and how to, like, portray a show, but it's also them figuring out on the back end the logistics of, like, okay, we have a budget and we have to pace it and we have to plan it all out. And they ended up, yeah, making some moves that feel in context weird in order to make the show, like, actually able to be made.
Yeah, and because Rooster Teeth has made shows before, however, their main show before this, they've had a couple small ones, but their main show before this that it continues to run is Red vs. Blue. And that show is initially entirely filmed with capture cards in Machinima, which means that all that matters is the hours of your salary paid employees who are working out of a one bedroom apartment on original Xboxes. And then later it becomes a fleet of Xboxes and you have a budget so that you can have a couple special action scenes animated by your animation team per season when you want them. But you still shoot it all in Halo. So really all of your budget is just, hey, we have to keep everybody paid every month. As far as like moving controllers around in time, not as in doing detailed animation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those are very different budgetary situations. And I bet you that a season of Red versus Blue probably could have a actually bigger budget for the shorter number of cutscenes or special fight scenes that they do, because that's probably the show that, I don't know if now it brings in more subscribers actually, but at least at first when Ruby came out, I'm sure that was still the one bringing more subscribers. And so Ruby was probably trying to make an entire 16 episode show on less of a budget than just the special fight scenes for the other show.
Yeah, I think, it was definitely them going out on a limb with a new thing, and I think they were probably pretty willing to cut it off if it didn't work out.
Yeah, I will also, I was going to say something, but I also realized that it was, like, something that people who worked at the company said to, like, really prop up how great the guy who owns the company is, and so I actually just don't know how, like, I don't know how legitimate the behind-the-scenes story that's told is. And so I don't really know if I want. I don't know. It's the thing is that also Rooster Teeth has a weird community. And they're very devoted. And they're very happy with... They come to Rooster Teeth expecting exactly what they get from Rooster Teeth. And they're very happy about it. That's the majority of the Rooster Teeth fan base, it seems to me, having, like, watched a bunch of Rooster Teeth shows and interacted on forums and been a sponsor for a number of years, way back in the past. And so it feels like talking about this show, as far as, like, the production history and stuff, always feels a little weird because it was made by a company... built by friends trying to work together and blowing it up into a major entertainment company that they sold for significant amounts of money. And there's a weird cult of personality that stays very entrenched and very in line with basically saying that, like, these are really great people and their labor practices are great and the numerous accounts otherwise on animation teams never happened, and it gets pretty nasty sometimes. And so when I was going to say, like, a really positive, cheerful thing about how, like, oh, it was so cool that this show managed to get made because of X, it's like, well, who's telling that story and whose employees are coming out of there on Glassdoor reviews for a number of years saying that they're terrible working conditions. And I sort of didn't know how to talk about Ruby without talking about the fact that I've continued to see stuff about that in the years since I stopped watching Ruby.
I mean, I'm not going to mince words. I have an active dislike of Rooster Teeth as a studio. I actually think they're shitty. I like Ruby, and I like the weird thing that it is, but I also think Ruby exists in large part in spite of what Rooster Teeth is, not because of it. And I don't know. I'm not going to be here basically giving them any credit for this. I will give credit to Monty Ohm, and I will give credit to them wanting to, like, I appreciate the people who wanted to keep it going after he left, but also I think part of the reason is just because it was making them money. I don't know. I don't have a lot. As much as I have an appreciation of the work, I don't have very much appreciation for the people behind it.
You know, maybe I should, in light of everything that we said, say what the story is, feel weird about now.
Sure.
They say that the way that the show got made was that when it was the original RVB guys working on Red vs. Blue and a couple production interns, Monty came in and would work, and then they describe crunch conditions, and they describe horrible crunch conditions for years, and they say that Monty put himself through them, and so getting to make his own show was when he said that he wanted to make his own show. They said, well, you've earned it because you've worked so hard this whole time. And in that community, that story is painted as an incredibly wonderful good thing about how great the owner of the company is. And it feels pretty fucking disgusting to me.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. It's, you know, I think it's good that we brought it up. I don't think we can talk about Ruby without talking about Rooster Teeth some. But yeah, I think they fucking suck. It makes it kind of weird, I will grant you. And that's part of the reason why I, like, the way they release the show is, like, they release it early on their own site, and then it comes out later on Crunchyroll. I will never watch it on their site. I'm not going to give them money for it.
Yeah, neither am I. Like, I'm not going to fuck with them.
Yeah. Word.
That was the first episode we wanted to be like, hey, Ruby is this really great thing because you look at it this way and you see this. And then after that, it's like, okay, well, we didn't talk about all the spoilers. They're so good. And then it's like, and there's no escaping the materiality of the production of the show.
I don't think necessarily that you should separate creator from creation. I don't think that's a thing you necessarily need to do. But it's a weird case, because I do feel like there's, like, one, I don't, like, how much do you want to hold the sort of the sins of the like the CEOs against the people underneath them, right? Like, as you say, like, I don't think Monty Ohm is a shitty person for crunching to make fucking CG fight scenes for Red versus Blue. I'm not holding that against him, right? And if this show was his, like, quote unquote fucked up reward for all his work, it's like, well, then he was passionate enough about this that he's going to suffer through it, and I respect that. So from that angle, it's like, of course I want to support this. But of course, all that money is going back one place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't know, it's a weird situation.
Yeah, watch on YouTube and turn on Adblock. Watch the show. The show is worth watching. The show is not worth supporting. That's, I think, what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's worth seeing. It's art worth experiencing, worth processing, worth studying even, but it is not something worth supporting.
Well, that sounds like a conclusion if ever I've
heard.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ. Way to end an episode.
Olivia, where can people find you on the internet?
At my Twitter, which is going to be in the show notes. And yeah, keep an eye on there. Possibly for some itch.io links starting to show up in the next couple weeks. And like one every week or two for a while, and we'll see what sorts of things develop there over time.
All right. Sounds good. If you want to check out my stuff, I'll be a bumper at the end of the show for all the Scanline Media Network podcasts, which is not just me, but it's part of what I run. And my Twitter handle is at sixdetmar, SIXDETTMAR. It is also in the show notes. And I think that does it for us.
All right, that's it. Have a good one.
Yeah. Peace out.
Peace out.
You're listening to a Scanline Media Network podcast. Check out our other podcasts like Bottle Crow Reborn. So here's the thing, Nick.
Nobody cares.
No.
It's not about that.
You actually convinced me.
Shit.
The Garnet Wager. And immediately we get Yunji being like, so hang on. Why does everyone call Jin-Ho Kong? And Jin-Ho, like, really circuitously explains because they're making fun of me.
Like, it means bean, but it's all, like, small person, and, like, I'm...
Neutral game.
So if you reverse the frame data, you can still play the game. It'll just sometimes take longer to figure some stuff out.
Oops, all anime gaiden. I've known some podcasters with taste, and they're all cowards. Let's talk about today's menu.
Oh my God.
For the Emiya family. Operation Cereal.
Episode 4 yep. was a bit more understandable, but also I continue to sour on these kids. I think they're dicks.
Okay, that's fair.
And our patron-only podcast, Oops All Anime.
and he has the blessed privilege of getting an invite. He shreds it in front of her, looks her in the eye, like touches
wipes
her face,
a tear off of her eye.
Wipes a tear off of her eye and goes, "I'll kill you."
Visit Scanline Media at scanlinemedia.com and our Patreon at patreon.com/scanlinemedia. Without you in it, all of the joy that I had known for all my life was stripped away from me the minute that you died. To have you in my life was all I ever wanted, but now without you, I'm a soul forever haunted. Can't help but feel that I had taken you for granted. No way in hell that I can.